Always Sold on to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Jordan Valdez, Tim Miller, Jazz Edmaja, Chris Fuchs, Thomas Navin, Joe Mikindo, Trayvon Brady, Steve Rogers, Cameron Minard, Gavante Chillis, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Adam Parker, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Fansler, Varun Hans, and Zerwhiskey. Thank you so much to all of these patrons, and you too can become a patron of Always Sold on to Smallville by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Sold on to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. And we are here, guys, season four. We're starting a brand new season, and who am I joined by this week but Mr. Daniel Prue. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a little while since I've been on, and no new powers this episode, but actually kind of. Clark gets the best power of all, Lois Lane. So,
see, you guys, you thought he was going to say one thing. He said something else. He zigged, he zagged. That's why he's fun to talk to. So welcome back to the show, Dan. That's funny. You know, we had been talking about some new powers. I didn't really think about that as one of our kind of themes, you know, when I have the same people on talking about stuff over shows. You know, I know you love Lois Lane on the show. You know, you really wanted to talk about Crusade. I'm all about that. So here we are. I didn't think about the flight thing, though. And apparently neither did you.
Yeah. It does happen, but I guess it doesn't count. Because, you know, they had the whole rule. So it doesn't count if it's not actually Clark.
Yeah, know? So they, of course, the no flights, no tights rule. They were saying, oh, well, you know, it's Kal-El. It's like, okay, guys, loophole. This is Clark Kent flying. What did you think about that? Like, this is season four. At the time, you think Smallville's going to run 5 years, maybe six or seven at the most. Four seasons in, seems like a good time to have him fly. Now, when you zoom back out to here we are now, and the show lasted 10 years, and he's flying in the fourth season, and it doesn't become Superman for six more years, it seems kind of early, but what did you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo that sentiment. Basically, it feels appropriate in the context of the beginning of the fourth season of the show. But when you do look at the whole show, it does seem like, oh man, then he just has 5 years of not flying. And that feels really strange because he obviously has the capability to do it. But, you know, they weren't, you know, consistency wasn't always their strongest suit. So that's okay.
No, consistency and continuity, you know, things that are always fun to talk about, especially when you're doing a podcast on the show, but it was great. I mean, it was an event, you know, in season four. I remember when season four was coming out, it was a big deal that they cast Lois Lane. They had all these posters, like His Destiny Arrives. And I don't know if you remember, there was like a shots of him in that black shirt with like the first half of the shirt unbuttoned, like showing off his chest. Mm-hmm. Fly. And then him and Lois in the cornfield. It was a big push because, you know, it was this was the height of Smallville, the second, third, and fourth season. You know, that's when it was in really in the pop culture more than just the nerd culture. You'd still see it on, like, TV guides and magazines and stuff. And then after that, you know, with any show, once you get past kind of 5 years, it kind of falls off the mainstream radar, unless you're some mega, mega hit on a mega, mega network. And Smallville never was, but it was a mega hit on the CW and the WB. So, yeah, those were good times. You know, and then knowing that he was going to fly, you know, you think you're going in season four, you're building towards something. Season three, you know, I'll say this, you know, going through the podcast here, I got to say where I'm sitting right now, season three is probably the best season, my favorite season so far. I thought it was the most consistent season. I felt like they had a story arc. They started and kind of went all the way through, and it was a very fulfilling, you know, full season experience. You know, the beginning of season four, and I'm on record here, season four is probably my least favorite season of the show. So because it was such a dramatic departure from season three, you know, and in Smallville, the official companion, season four, by Craig Byrne, friend of the podcast, Krypton Site, K-Site TV webmaster, who's been on the podcast many times. We're finally into Craig's books. He wrote the companion seasons 4, 5, 6, and 7. So, Craig, we're on to your books, man. But creator Al Goff had this to say about season 3 versus season 4. As good as I think the third season was, I think it just got very dark and a little too adult. We got a little too sci-fi, and it lost the core idea of Clark Kent before he's Superman in high school, dealing with his issues, and this year we try to get back to that. So what do you think about that, Dan, season 3 versus 4, and where this whole fourth season went with things?
Well, you know, it's been a little bit longer since I've seen season 3, though I do remember liking it quite a bit. I can say just from watching this episode, however, that it gets off to an immediate rocky start. There's a lot of stuff that I kind of forgot about. I'm specifically thinking of, like, the whole Lana plot line.
Yes, we'll get into that.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil it, but it's just like, oh god, if this is the start of that stuff, I'm like, eh, it's rough, you know. And like, the whole thing's wrapped up pretty neatly and cleanly and quickly in this episode, so it also feels sloppy in that manner. It's such a weird thing to hear the creator of the show say we were getting too sci-fi, and it's like, your show's about an alien, dude. Like, you know,
embrace it.
Yeah. I mean, which they do obviously eventually, but
right.
They're like
Clark. They don't want to embrace their Kryptonian destiny, Dan. Yeah. They want to stay in Smallville and do their high school stuff, you know, and we all just want them to grow up. Yeah. But let's talk about, before we jump into the episode part, let's talk about Lois Lane here. You know, this is a big deal for the show. There was a big theory back in the day that Chloe was going to be Lois Lane. The fans were all about this on the internet. I was a fan of that because I loved Chloe. I thought Clark should end up with Chloe. I would always pick Chloe over Lana. You know, Chloe was my girl. You know, I was all about that. And you know, you had all the signs. She was the reporter. She was this. She was that. But then, you know, Lois Lane shows up on the show. You kind of have to say, all right, that was a cool idea, but it's not happening. You know, and. I rarely read actual excerpts from Neil Bailey's Superman homepage review, but I had to read this one. He starts off his review of Crusade. He says this: "Okay, it's official. I'll start this year off with a death threat. Any, and I mean any of you who write me now and tell me that Chloe might be Lois, boom, you're gonna get X's for eyes. Get me? Just like in the cartoons. Yeah." So, sincerely. So, he was done with the Chloe's Lois theory. I get why people got annoyed by it, because, you know, you get on the internet, people get behind their theories, people argue, it's what the internet's for, right? I thought that would have been a real cool twist, okay? I think that would have been a unique thing to do for the show, because a lot of the reasons people said Chloe couldn't be Lois, you know, Lois herself on this show, their version, did all those things. They're like, look, Chloe knew Clark before he was Superman. Chloe knew him without glasses. It's like, Lois was on this show, again, talking about the flight, Dan.
Right.
Lois, this is season 4. You're like, okay, 4, 5, it makes sense if you're going to bring her into it now. She's on this show for 7 of the 10 years.
Yeah.
Lois Lane, you know, a show called Smallville. So it is kind of weird, and she eventually did all those things. Now, I came to love Lois on this show. I did. Around season 8. And I know that sounds like a long time, but I felt like with Lois and Chloe both on the show, they both kind of couldn't, like, Chloe was the Lois, and they couldn't turn Lois into Lois until they made Chloe not the Lois anymore. So I know that sounds complicated, but they just kept, like, going in circles because they didn't know when the show was going to end, when this or that, and they kept all these characters around. Chloe was the one working at the Daily Planet, you know, and Lois is, like, doing her own thing. So when they let Lois be Lois, I loved it. In the last, you know, 8, 9, and 10, like, where it was kind of like that, like, basically Lois and Clark, the New Adventures of Smallville, right, seasons of the show, right? That was great. So, you know, I initially was like, who is like, bringing Lois in? Because there was a lot of change in season 4 here. Like, you got Jason Teague alone. We'll get into that as we talk about the episode. But you got that going on. You got Lois. It really did feel like a whole new show. And I was kind of hesitant towards it for all the things. I think the Lois kind of got caught up in everything else they were changing. I feel like they changed too many things this season because the show was working well. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that's kind of, I have a very complicated thoughts about how Lois brought in the show. Now, in retrospect, now, I'm watching it back now. I hadn't seen this episode in a long time. Erica Durance was great. Like, she brought the personality. She brought her A game. I look at her and I say, you know what? That's a spunky Lois Lane right there. I like that. But what, you're a big fan of her as Lois Lane. What did you think about her coming on the show in this episode?
Yeah, I mean, like what you were just mentioning, all of the sort of like production and looking at it through the context of the whole show, like, I agree with you that it was very difficult for them to put Lois in that role while Chloe was already fulfilling that role. And I think they definitely had their bumps and snags there. I just think, I mean, just from the get-go, it's Erica Durance's performance, it's her chemistry. It's just, I mean, she's just kind of magnetic on the screen. I mean, frankly, she's my, I can't even think of anybody who even come closest to compare to, like, she's my favorite, favorite Lois Lane by 3 miles. You know, it's, there's nothing that even compares. Like, this is the best casting since Lex, I would argue, you know.
Okay. All right. So Rosenbaum is your Lex.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Durance is your Lois. Now is Welling your Superman though, Dan? That's the real question.
No, I don't know that I have a Superman, honestly.
Right.
It is as weird as that sounds. It's just like there's good bits of all of them, but none of them I would say would, like, it's like I could say the animated series Batman is my Batman.
Yeah.
Because he's the best Batman you could be. Whereas Superman, I don't think has ever had that sort of perfect vision on the screen in any way. I mean, some people say that the 70s movies, but which are great. That, you know, obviously Christopher Reeve did a great job. But no, like, yeah, Rosenbaum is Lex. Durance for me is Lois. And it's just because of how I really do. I think she does a very good job at having that, like you say, that spunk, that tenacity, that sort of, you know, doesn't take crap from anybody sort of thing. And she's also, she's also very vulnerable at the same time. And you see that a little bit in this episode. But I just loved her from the get-go. And then, like you say, once that they give the character room to grow, she just gets better and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I gotcha. I'm a Christopher Reeve guy. You know, I know that's cliche.
Sure.
But I mean, he is my Superman, and he was just so perfect. It's hard to, no one else has captured, and I totally get what you're saying. It's like, you got to tick all the boxes. Yeah. He's the one that's ticked the most boxes for me. There are others who have ticked other boxes, but like, until we get somebody who can tick all the boxes, I feel like if Henry Cavill would have had a better movie, so he might have, but yeah, we all know how that turned out. Same thing with Brandon Routh. I loved Brandon Routh, but he had a lot of boxes that he didn't get to tick because of the movies he was in. So, you know, it's hard to get those icons. But, you know, so Smallville, right? You know, iconic performances for all these iconic characters. And that's another reason why we love it so much.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, and we'll talk about another Lois Lane as we get into the episode here.
Oh, but, that's right. Yes.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, so, but final word from the companion here for a while. Al Goff also said that writing the season four opener was like writing a new pilot. With the introduction of Lois and Jason, all of the relationship dynamics had changed. I think we embraced the fact that in many ways, the series was approaching middle age, and we had to shake things up and add new characters, new dynamics, and bring in new ideas. And, you know, there is something to be said for that. You know, I mean, that's part of the criticism of Smallville. Like, it went on and on and on. And, you know, they were trying to shake things up. I mean, you got to give them credit there, I guess. I don't think they need to shake things up just this much this early. But, again, they didn't know they were going to go 10 years. They thought they were going to go, like, 4 or 5. So...
right.
But here we are. You know, it's season four. It's a new chapter. Like I said, I've said before, I feel like, you know, seasons 1 through 3 is one volume of Smallville. Season four is like its own volume. You know, it's this bridge, right, between Smallville and Metropolis. 5, 6, and 7 are its own volume, and then 8, 9, and 10 are its own volume. So season four, a very unique island unto itself. But let's get into it. Crusade.
3 relics. Hidden around the world by scientifically advanced ancient cultures. Legend has it that when united, they point the way to a treasury of knowledge that puts the Library of Alexandria to shame.
You're chasing a fairy tale, Lex.
A fairy tale you believed in enough to finance 6 expeditions over the last 2 years.
Funded several educational digs through the Luther Corp Foundation. So
they all focused on sites that unearthed the same symbols as those in the cave wall.
Do you think those artifacts can save your life, Dad?
I don't have time for foolishness, Lex. I'm about to stand trial for murder. And when I'm cleared, those responsible for putting me here will certainly feel my wrath.
Like Chloe did.
Chloe Sullivan was killed in a tragic accident. She didn't deserve to die.
But I did. Is that why you poisoned my brandy?
Oh, what kind of a monster do you think I am?
I lay there for 10 minutes before the paramedics came, Dad. 10 minutes. They said that dosage would kill an ordinary man, but apparently I'm not ordinary.
No, you're not. You're my son.
God help me.
Crusade is the first episode of Smallville's fourth season. It aired on September 22nd, 2004. It was written by Alfred Goff and Miles Millar and directed by Greg Beeman. Now, did you watch these on like Hulu or your DVD, or how did you watch this episode, Dan?
In my college days, when I had less money, managed to procure some Smallville seasons via the magic of the internet, and so I've had them that way for... I don't buy DVDs, so and I don't have a Hulu subscription, so yeah, I just have those.
Well, I asked you, perhaps then, since you acquired them through under-the-table means, did you get a previously on Smallville clip before the episode started on yours?
You know what? I didn't, and I actually didn't even think about that, but yeah, I was kind of confused hopping into it because I hadn't watched the episode previously.
Yeah, that's weird because, you know, these days on like the Arrowverse, right? Like every episode... Like, it's a part of the episode, like, previously on Arrow or previously on The Flash, right? With Smallville, you know, it was, like, part of, like, the advertisement promotion. Like, I remember back in the day, they'd be like, last season on Smallville, right? And you'd see some stuff. But with the last two season premieres, it's just been, like, 3 months later, and you start. And, like, I have no context for anything.
You
know? Yeah. It would have been nice if they included something. So I was curious, you know, if you'd seen that. But yeah, they just drop you into it. And it's there's no previously on. You're 3 months later, and we start with this video message from Chloe, and it's you know, Allison Mack's one appearance in the episode, right? And she is telling Clark, you know, that he's the only one that can solve what happened to her. It's like, if you're watching this, I'm already dead. It made me think of The Office. I don't know if you've seen the episode where Michael Scott's recording stuff for his son.
Yeah.
He's like, hello, son. If you're watching this, I'm already dead. It's just such a cliche. And this is why, right? Because you have a character who's recording. I don't know. Who records that? Would you do that? Would you leave, like, messages in the
Certainly not feature? In high school. No, I definitely wouldn't do that.
It's just, you know, it is what it is, right? But who is watching it but Erica Durance's Lois Lane, right?
In the torch.
Yeah, so I don't know who let her in the school office. That's a great point.
Yeah.
She is not a Smallville High School student. I don't even know if they ever establish how old Lois is. Because she's, like, in college, so she's a little older than them. But she's – that they never really – because she gets kicked out of college. So they didn't really, never really say how old she is.
I like to assume that she was just a freshman when she got kicked out. So she's just, like – I guess that would put her at, what, 2 years older than the gang?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like to think that there's too much of a gap, because then it gets weird thinking about her being a college-age student hanging out with a bunch of high schoolers.
Right. Well, as opposed to Lex being a billionaire hanging out with a bunch of high schoolers, right?
That's very true.
So she watches this message, as you point out, very strangely in the Torch office. I guess they just wanted to get that set in this week. And then she's driving down the road on her cell phone, talking on the cell phone and driving, Lois. How poor driving etiquette there. But she's trying to get directions, and this is before smartphone, folks, so it makes you appreciate your GPS on your phone, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And she even says, do farms even have addresses? I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's funny. She has a lot of great lines in this, definitely. Very Lois lines, you know, because, you know, that's the thing. She'd always make fun of, you know, Clark Kent, you know, in future iterations by calling him Smallville and all this stuff. And this is her, big city girl, coming to the small town, making her comments. But she encounters a lightning storm of some kind. And a lightning strike, like, strikes right next to her car, drives it into a cornfield. And then we see Clark basically Terminators himself into the cornfield.
Oh, yeah.
Was this not completely Terminator, Dan?
This was ripped straight from Terminator. Which, okay, that's fine if you want to have a little homage. That's okay.
This show seems to rip off Terminator a lot, though, I find.
Yeah.
You have strong, naked characters, you know, showing up in places, fighting, you know. But yeah, you have the lightning, you have, like, the orb, you have, like, Clark, even the way he stands up, right? It's so like, it's like they showed him the Terminator. Say, like, hey, Tom, do this. You know, he does that, right? You know, Lois is like driven into the cornfield and finds him. There is a, did you catch a little S in the electricity though?
Yes, I did. I thought it was a little over the top actually. And I was like, yes. Okay, I see what you're doing.
Back off the Superman references, yeah. Right? Because, you know, in season three, he was floating in, you know, wherever he was, and his body was kind of in an S
because
he was in like a fetal position.
Yep,
yeah,
I remember that.
So it's like, okay, they're carrying that on. We get it. And I guess this is just, you know, talking about Covenant, the season finale, I'm just going to assume that this is how that not Supergirl, Supergirl came out of the cave as well. You know, she had her Terminator thing. She showed up naked, goes up to the Kent farm. So I'm going to assume there was a lightning storm and all that stuff then as well. But anyway, Lois comes out. Clark has no idea who he is. He has amnesia. So we have a plus one for amnesia count. This is so classic Smallville. Actually, she has some good lines here because he's naked. And she's like, look at it. Look at his face.
Yeah.
That's a good line there. But whenever there's like an iconic character of some kind, they have to do it this way. He's like, wait, who are you? She says, Lois. Lois Lane.
Yep.
It's like, somebody save me. He's like, yeah, okay, we get it. All right, it's Lois Lane, people.
It's the James Bond introduction, and they do it like every... Yeah, we talked about...
Yeah,
Perry
White.
White. They did the same thing there, yeah.
Perry White. Somebody save me.
Exact so, you know, same intro, yeah.
Now, interesting bit of trivia here. When Smallville season four, you know, when Crusade first came out, season four came out, they had a custom opening credits without Allison Mack in it.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was really clever. Now you get to the DVDs and they throw that out, and it's like you kind of lose the illusion. I know that we know Chloe's in season four; it's no mystery. But it would be nice if they at least tried to preserve the, you know,
well,
what
you know,
they did.
It actually seems like a whole lot of work for nothing, because if you get that scene with Lois and the torch before the credits, you still have her in the episode, so you can you technically you'd still credit her. That's okay.
Oh, I wonder what they did. I wonder.
And if in by the end of the episode, you know, she's still alive. So it's like, did you just do that whole extra work for nothing? Because,
well, they were at the time, and Craig Byrne was telling this in the last episode, that they there was a whole thing like Alex and Mac went to Comic-Con and they were acting like Chloe was dead. It's like, yeah, I had a good run on the show. Like, they were really going hard with like Chloe's not coming back, you know. But then I think they released some clips and some pictures of the season she's in it. So to your point, they kind of like, they kind of played themselves. Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
But they went out of their way to make an alternate opening credits, and they don't even put it, you know, on the DVD. Somebody made that. Some editor, like myself, sat in the editing bay and made that, you know. And there is a copy of it online that I have that I will upload to our social media so everybody can check it out. So there's very subtle differences. No Allison Mack, no Chloe in those opening credits. And do you watch Babylon 5? Are you a Babylon 5 fan, Daniel?
My co-host at my Star Trek podcast made me watch one episode of Babylon 5, so that is the extent that I have with that show.
Okay, well, I'm going to spoil Babylon 5 just for a second.
That's okay.
Because they had a very similar thing. So in the first season of B5, Delenn, she's one of the ambassadors. She's a Minbari, right? And then in the... I'm a huge B5 fan, so... So then at the end of season one, she goes into a chrysalis, right? And then she comes out in season two, and she her appearance has changed. She's like part human and part Minbari now, so she has hair, and she looks very different. She looks a lot more human, right? And that was a twist, right? That was a reveal. So what they did on Babylon 5, they did something very similar. They made a custom opening credits for like the first two episodes of Babylon 5 season two, with the Lynn's picture, or you know, the video of her, but she was the season one Delenn, right? And then she comes out of her cocoon, she has hair and all that. And then moving forward, they had a new, you know, video clip of her, and she had her hair and stuff. But again, like Smallville, on the DVDs and all the other versions you see of it, like on Amazon Prime and stuff, they don't care. They throw out that alternate opening, and they just put in the one from the other episodes. And it's interesting to me that, like, these episodes aren't complete things when they like produce them like this. Like I guess they insert the opening credits from another source. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Because you'd think it'd be a complete thing. You'd think it'd be easier to just do it as it was broadcast, but apparently not.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a rabbit hole for you. We're done there. Just wanted to get all that out. We come back and we have a very, and I'm getting all these, you know, talk about Terminator. This reminded me of like the Fifth Element. You know, where they're digging in Egypt and they find something. I don't know why.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Okay, yeah.
But like these guys, and I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Egypt movies and all
well,
this
I was
kind
thinking
stuff,
Indiana Jones, but I could see
there you go.
I could see it. Yeah.
So I mean, it is. You understand what's going on here, right? They have found. I like the direction too. Like you start out in black, and then they dig the hole. You know, and they pull out this very Egyptian-looking artifact. You know, these you know the guys working to this in this cave. And then they, you know, everybody calls, like, oh, we found something. And then Lex comes in. I got to say, Lex in all white is a good look, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, my my girlfriend was watching with me, and she goes, man, I have such a crush on him right now. And I was like, yeah, he's looking good.
He's also in a lot better shape than we left him at season 3 when he was, you know, choking to death. But we explain that in a little bit here. All his, you know, workers, they hand him this, you know, looks like just, you know, an Egyptian artifact. And he flips it over. What's on the back? Kryptonian letters, right?
There you go. That's how you know it's about to get real.
It's about to get real, indeed. So then we cut back to Smallville. We got plus one for a hospital visit because Lois has taken Clark to the hospital. Put him in a red blanket, you know, because we have to do that, right? Again, come on, guys. You can tune it down just a little bit. We know he's going to be Superman.
Put him in green, just for fun, you know?
Now, there are so many red blankets on this show, though.
Yeah.
Like, whenever a blanket is required, Clark has a giant red blanket.
Yeah.
You know, like that.
Yeah, what about plaid? He's a farmer.
Yeah, exactly.
It could even still be red. At least it's patterned and it's interesting.
Yeah, it's not like, look, guys, we get it. It's a cape, okay? But anyway, that's what the show is, and why am I complaining about it, right?
Yeah,
so, you know, during this, by the way, we get our, talking about opening credits and stuff, we get special guest star, Erica Durance. And, you know, she was actually, like, originally, she was going to be, like, in 2 episodes, like, the premiere, you know? And I think they negotiated up to 4, and then they negotiated up to, like, 13. And then by the time season 5 comes around, she's in the opening credits. But even then, like, it was the movie division, so, like, you can't have Lois Lane for more than, you know, 75% of the season or something. So there was a rule up until, I think, season 8, where she was only in 13 episodes. And that's why she there's these big gaps of episodes where she would just disappear, you know?
Yeah, that's lame.
Yeah, and so she's basically Dr. Pulaski this season, right, Daniel? Because she's got special appearance by.
Yeah, that makes sense. Although she feels much more like a guest person this season than any of the other ones, it feels like.
Yeah, for sure. She's a lot more integral in the future seasons here. But so she brings Clark in. She tries to, like, say, hey, I found this guy in a field. Here he is. I'm gonna go on my way. And the guy working the desk is like, oh, no, that's not how it works. You think this is an animal shelter? No, this is hospital policy. You have to stay with him. I think that's a pretty BS policy. What about you, Daniel?
Yeah, you know, I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit at that as well. I was like, look, if you did just, I guess I understood the idea that maybe you would need to give a police statement. But, nobody's going to stop her from just walking out if she brought somebody in that needed help, you know? They should probably be focused on the patient instead of who's bringing him in.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a plot device to get them together, but I just, like, it's hospital policy that just made me laugh. But so they're stuck together now for a while, which was amusing. And then we get to our Lana plot of the episode. And we get her... just the most, like, forced Paris stuff ever. Like, we see the Eiffel Tower. We see these French girls with, like, their, you know, their little hats, like Madeline. Or
oh,
that girl's
my goodness.
Name is,
that was,
you know?
So over the top. like Smallville is not, in any sense of the word, the most subtle show of all time. But those Madeline girls were just like, okay, have you ever seen a picture of Paris? Like, what is this supposed to be? Like, is this a parody?
This is so, like, network television's interpretation of Paris.
It's
definitely
so bad. Oh man.
And then I had to laugh because Lana went to, like, Paris School of the Arts, right? That's what she's supposedly doing, but she's, like, going around, like, taking pictures now. It's like, what is this? So, oh my goodness, I really, and look, Lana is a very contentious subject off the show, but it would have been nice if she left for real after season 3 for a while. Talk about shaking things up, right?
Mm-hmm. Not just for a while, forever and for always, but that's just my personal opinion.
Well, especially if this is what they were going to do with it.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Because then we get oh, I know what we'll do. We'll give Lana another season-long boyfriend, because that works out so well. So she has this, like, fake meet-cute with Jason Teague,
uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, hey, are you American? I ran into my girlfriend. Well, she's not my girlfriend, but we spent all this time together, and it was at the same spot, and I got her. And it's like exposition. I guess it's a cute way, in theory, to give us exposition on how they met or something, but it's apparently their 2-month anniversary, and he bought her a helmet because they're going to Nice, which is, I've never heard of Nice. Do you know what Nice is? Is that, like, a cool place to go?
I guess so, at least in the world of Smallville.
She seemed excited about it. So this is our introduction, though, to Jason Teague. He is in the main credits, unlike Lois Lane. He's a new main character. If you watch the opening credits, you're like, is this guy a football coach? What is this? We haven't even got there yet. This episode is a terrible introduction to his character, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's charming in just because the actor is charming. So you don't like...
Jensen Ackles, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't hate him or anything like that, but you're just... He just does seem kind of like a doofusy boyfriend that has no person. You know, he's charming and sweet and kind, but he just, there's nothing to him. He's just all fluff, and he's not in any way interesting.
He's a goofball.
Yeah,
he's a goofball here, and hey, here we go, right? Supernatural is what Dean. Okay, so Dean Winchester is his name on Supernatural. His character, mm-hmm. But Jensen Ackles is the actor, and Jason Teague is the character on Smallville. I get them all confused in my head all the time. But this was his start. On the WB. Now he was actually the runner up to play Clark Kent. If Tom Welling had turned it down, which he did turn it down like three times, but they kept asking him to do it. He was the runner up, and he would have been Clark Kent. So now it's kind of like the Star Trek thing, right? Where Tim Russ didn't get Geordi, but he became Tuvok, and he was a guest star and stuff like that. So pay your dues, you get stuff. He was on Smallville here for one season, spoilers, right? And then he went on to do Supernatural.
For
Supernatural,
25 seasons. So
still on the air!
There you go.
It is still on the air. Do you have watched Supernatural? Have you ever seen it, Dan?
Not even once. Not even a little bit, yeah.
I've only seen bits and pieces, and it was like after or before one of the other shows I'm watching, where it's just kind of on the TV. People love it. You know, 300 episodes, more power to them. They seem to have a good thing going there. They blew past Smallville's 10-year record, but hey, good on you.
You know, I will say that the one piece of Supernatural information that ever came out that I was actually really interested in and almost sought it out was their Scooby-Doo crossover, which I thought was a really cool, neat idea. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah. So it was an animated episode,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they basically just went into Scooby-Doo verse, and they made an episode like that, and I thought that was really, really cool.
Well, when you go 300 episodes, I guess you can do stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
You know, yeah. But anyway, this is our first taste of the world's introduction. I mean, I'm sure you did other things, right? But this is the world's introduction to Jensen Ackles here.
Can we talk about that idea, though, for a second? I cannot imagine him in the Clark Kent role, like, even for a second. He doesn't look like Clark Kent to me, like, not even a little.
I mean, I assume he would dye his hair black. I mean, he would have to.
Yeah.
I mean, that would go a long way, I think. I mean, say what you will about Tom Welling. You look at him like, yeah, that guy looks like he could be Superman.
Right,
you know?
right away.
Like the comic book version that you know of. You know, I think if he had longer hair, because he has kind of a buzz cut, like that's his thing, Jensen Ackles. There was some episode of Supernatural where, and I've seen this like on Twitter, like where he wore glasses and he looked just like, you know, kind of a Clark Kent type character.
Hmm.
So I think they could have turned him into looking like Clark Kent. But I'm right there with you. When people said that, I never saw it.
Yeah.
I never saw like, oh, yeah, clearly. Like, if you told me that Brandon Routh was the runner-up, right, I'd be like, oh, yeah, of course. But not so much Jason Teague over here. So that would have been, the CW would be a very different-looking network today if Jensen Ackles had played Tom Welling. I wonder if Jensen Ackles would have worn a Superman costume, Dan. That's the real question.
You know what? If he's sticking with Supernatural going on 4,000 episodes now, I bet you he would have put the suit on.
There it is. So I would trade a guy that didn't look as much like Clark Kent for a guy that would put on the Superman costume. But yeah, no, I'm right there with you. When I heard that, I was like, oh, okay, I guess. But anyway, so we'll get back to Jason as we go here. But then we cut back to Smallville. And we have another plus one for a hospital visit because Jonathan is in the hospital, and it's revealed to us that he's been in a coma for the last 3 months after Jor-El was choking him in the cave. And this is kind of a plot hole for me. Like, why is he in a coma? Why is Clark's, like, what he's doing affecting Jonathan in a coma? What kind of hole does Jor-El have over all these people? Like, to me, that's a plot hole.
It doesn't have to be because it's explained by one magical cave.
Yeah, the game.
So that fixes everything. All the plot holes are fixed. We can go home now.
Oh, perfect. All right. Well, this has been our thanks for joining us this week on Always on Smallville. No, so like I think the reason they did it this way is because last season Clark was gone, right? Between seasons 2 and 3, he was in Metropolis, and you had the Kents struggling to manage without Clark around, right? I feel like they didn't want to do that again. So they just kind of added this in with Jonathan's in a coma. Like, they showed him passed out in the cave at the end of season 3, but they could have gone lots of directions with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, thematically, especially for what happens at the end of the episode with Martha, like, the idea is interesting, I think. Like, it's she basically had to do this on her own this whole 3 months, you know? And that's interesting. They don't explore it long enough for it to mean anything, but I think that's a good idea for a story.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I think this is probably Annette O'Toole's best episode.
Yeah, you know, she's
so far on the show.
She's great.
She probably has her most stuff to do. Insurgents back in season 2 was a great Martha episode, but this might be even better than that because actually in the companion, Annette O'Toole says, I was really glad when it happened, because up until then, it had always been Jonathan going after him. It was nice to be the one to be really active and save the day. That's very true. That she was a lot more, centered to the story, since Jonathan was incapacitated. But she's reading him a book. Apparently, Tom Sawyer is his favorite book.
Which seems so appropriate.
Or was it Huckleberry Finn?
It was one of them.
It was one of the two. They're interchangeable, right?
Yeah.
But he would be the kind of guy that likes those books, right?
Like he read that book when he was in, grade school and just, that's it. That reached peak literature for him.
He's a man of simple things. Twain. It's Great American Literature, but still.
Yeah. Right?
But then the doctor comes in. And who is this doctor? But Rekha Sharma from Star Trek Discovery fame and Battlestar Galactica.
And Battlestar, yeah. I keep every time I see her, I think, oh, it's Battlestar. And I keep forgetting she was on Discovery.
Yeah.
Because she didn't last too long there. But, what an interesting thing to see her here. She's been around the block. Good for her.
Yeah, she is sprinkled in quite a few episodes of Smallville, actually.
Yeah.
It's like just kind of, it's these bit parts. She's the doctor, right? She's in several episodes, and it's cool to see. She's part of that stable of Canadian actors, and that's why she got on Battlestar. But like you, I always go to Battlestar when I think of her.
Yeah. She, she can attend, be a part of quite a few conventions, so that's probably good for her.
she can pretty much go to convention every weekend for the rest of her life for all the shows to be a part of. So, but she reveals to us that Jonathan has been brain dead, and that's pretty extreme, for him to be in a coma. And they mention that their insurance is tapped out, which is what we always joke about, like the kids and the car accidents and the hospital visits. It's like they at least pay lip service here, which I appreciate.
Yeah, it's like you say, you can't really think about it too much because none of it really makes any sense, but it's just a convenient way for everybody to get to the hospital, so let's do that.
Yes, exactly, because Lois is in the waiting room with Clark, and she's kind of giving Clark exposition about how she's here to investigate Chloe's death, and she starts chewing some Nicorette because she'd reached for a cigarette earlier. It's kind of a tie-in to, I saw it that way, is to the Superman movies from the 70s where Lois was smoking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Superman's like, really shouldn't smoke with Slade. So that was cute. That gives her some character. And basically, Clark keeps trying to leave, and she keeps trying to stop him. She's like, the only way you're getting out of here is through me. And she stands in the doorway, and he just picks her up, moves her over, and walks out, which is really funny.
That was a cute little scene, yeah.
So they're having some good meet-cutes here. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of Lois and Clark meeting when Clark was naked in a field and had amnesia, but they are making the most of it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that was not the creative choice that I would have made, but I think, like I say, largely on the shoulders of Erica Durance, especially in this episode where Tom doesn't really do much talking until the end. It's still done earnestly enough, and I think they do as good of a job as you could with that sort of scenario.
Mm-hmm. But as you said, everyone's in the hospital, right? So Clark starts wandering around, and Martha sees him, right? She's like, Clark, oh my God. So she runs up to him, and he's like, who are you? So he's really clueless about everything. She's like, oh, I have to take you home. And he says, I'm waiting for the sign. And this is like this – Smallville has these lines like this, like the day is coming, or only he can open it, or I'm waiting for the sign. Like these vague, just generic things, these Kryptonian things say that always kind of make me laugh when the characters say them,
Yeah, and it's – I mean – I just don't understand. Like, literally, he just has no motivation. He has nothing to do at all. He's literally just going to wander around until he hears that thing screeching. So he's just like, whatever. This lady tells me to sit down. I guess I'll just sit. Like, he has no agency or mind power. I don't understand his, it just was such a weird thing for me just to be like, oh, he's just a blank slate. He's like a turned off robot in this entire episode until he hears that screeching noise.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. You're trying to understand, where was he to begin with, and why did Jor-El send him back now? Because he's clearly not done with his training, because the whole show is about, him, Jor-El wanting him to come back and finish training, and Clark saying no, and all this, right? And the only thing I can think of is, because Lex discovered that artifact, that's why Jor-El let him out, to get him before the humans could. I don't know if the show ever explains that properly, but I think you can use your fanboy mind to justify why Clark got sent back to the real world.
Okay, so, and I don't want to jump ahead too much, but I just want, just for clarification then. He gets the stone, puts it in the wall, and leaves, and we know Martha's there, and stops him. But if he's done his task, he waited for the sign and he did the thing, what does he do for the rest of his life at that point?
he was going to get the other two stones.
So he's just going to wander around aimlessly until there's more screeching?
That he was going to wander around until someone found another stone. That's my understanding. Okay. Yes. That we're on the same page. Good.
It's a terrible plan, but okay. I'm ready to move on.
Oh, boy. So speaking of Egypt, you know, that's our next scene. Martha gets Clark out of the hospital. It's funny. They kind of brush off Lois because they don't know who she is, or, you know, and they don't want to deal with her right now. But they leave, and Lois is like, okay, that guy went off with that lady, so I'm free now. He's like, oh, that's Martha Kent. She's like, Kent? As in Clark Kent? That's who she was looking for the whole time. So yeah. It's funny. It's kind of ironic. But then we get to Lex in Egypt, and I like this. They're driving in a Jeep in the desert here, and he's like, I don't want anyone to know I was here. And he hands this guy like an envelope of these $100 bills. He says, you'll be like footprints in the sand. I thought that was pretty just cool, just Egyptian conversation there. And he gets on his plane, which look, I took a close eye to it, and it looked CGI to me. I mean, it was good CGI for TV, like in the 2000s, but clearly there was no actual plane out there in the desert.
Yeah, it was weird because there was no runway or anything. It was just it just looked like it was sitting in the middle of the sand. I'm like, okay, I guess that's sort of thing that you can do.
This is not a helicopter. but you know, he gets on the plane, and he has a doctor there explaining things that he quote survived massive chemical onslaught that would have killed 99.9% of people, unquote. And he has to have his blood purified every 72 hours. To me, obviously Lionel had poisoned him, right, at the end of season 3. That's the, if I were Lex, I'd stop drinking, you know, anything at my house, because that's the way he went crazy in season 3. Someone poisoned his brandy, and Lionel did it again. It's like, come on, man, just clear that place out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it had been established in season 3 that he was a meteor freak himself, because he had never been sick since the meteor shower. He had a healing factor. And I like that about this Lex Luthor. Like, he's not invulnerable, but he's, like, invulnerable to, like, disease and stuff. And you don't know what that means, like the old age or what, but I like that about this Lex Luthor, and that's the only reason he survived this poison too.
Yeah, I actually really like that aspect too. It makes him, I just, in a lot of ways, when Smallville makes things a little too convenient, like Lex was at the crash site where Clark landed, like that is a little eye rolly to me, but then it does link those characters in a way, so I can see kind of how that's a neat idea. But yeah, making him have some effect from kryptonite as well, but something positive, is like a real cool flip on the whole Superman normal storytelling sort of situation. Right. So I like that aspect of the character as well.
Yeah. So I don't know how this plot line is resolved. Like, I feel like they just kind of ignore it as it, classic Smallville. Like, he introduced this interesting idea and they just drop it. I'm going to just assume, again, we got to fanboy our way through this thing, right? I assume that over time, his, you know, white blood cell count or whatever it is, right, like, eliminated this poison, and he didn't have to have his blood purified anymore. Because I don't think they mention this again in the show. So
sounds about right.
Yeah, for Smallville, that sounds about right. Yeah. So I'm still waiting on Lucas Luthor to show up. But anyway, so Martha takes Clark back to what she says. Your dad calls it your Fortress of Solitude, which is a nice callback to Metamorphosis, the second episode where he tells Lana that's what his dad calls it. It was cute back before they had a real Fortress of Solitude on the show.
Yeah, things are a little different now.
The show catching up to himself is the problem, right? She asks him where he was the last 3 months. He says, I was in a place that felt like home. And then he sees a picture of Jonathan. He's like, oh, I know this man. He tried to keep me from fulfilling my destiny. And then he kind of aggressively drops the picture. Like, I don't think that was necessary, was it, Daniel?
No, I again, I'm not clear who's in charge here, because it doesn't seem like it's Jor-El, and it's obviously not Clark. So I don't really know who this person's supposed to be.
He is Kal-El of Krypton.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, yeah, this is, I'm going to call this a plus one for under the influence, because he's under Kryptonian influence. Like, he's not, you're right, he's not, Jor-El has not possessed him, which I thought maybe they might have been saying, and he's not mind controlled per se, but you're right, he is, I don't even know the writers know what he is in this episode, but he is kind of a blank slate there. But anyway, they encounter some turbulence on the airplane that Lex is on. And he drops this 1,000-year-old artifact.
Oh,
and
man.
Shatters.
Yeah, you don't want to have butterfingers with something like that.
Like, come on, Lex. God, this thing was around for 6,000 years, and he just shatters. Luckily for him, the real contents is what the valuable thing, right? And we see this stone. And him touching the stone, I guess, is the sign that Kal-El was looking for. And this is my theory, again, right? Season 4, you got to connect the dots yourself, but not in like the make you think because we're smart writers way, to like we were too lazy to connect the dots, so you figure it out way. So like you have Naman and Sagith, right? That's like the legend from season 3 from the Kwachi tribe, right? You have the episode Talisman where they have the knife, right? And like if Sagith touches the knife, it like disappears, and like Lionel and Lex both grab for the knife and it disappears. You're like, which one's Sagith, right? So if Lex is Sagith and Clark is Naman, right? Whenever like Sagith is next to the stones, Clark hears the calling, the sign, right? And then he goes and has to grab him. That's my theory, and I know it checks out for at least two of these stones. I don't know about the third one.
But what's just so like such a big coincidence? The fact that Lex just happened to get this stone the day that Clark gets back, and it's like,
well, that's what I'm saying. That is why Clark came back, because he got it. That's my only explanation.
Okay, so you're saying you think that he reappeared in the field after Lex had already had possession of the stone?
Although we saw that first, I'm going to ignore the timeline. It's Egypt, right? So there's a time difference. Yeah.
So. Oh man, you are giving them way too much credit.
I'm just trying to make this. I'm not giving them credit. I'm just trying to make sense of it, Dan.
Okay. So. Yeah, because it's. But okay, let's even grant that. Let's say that did happen in that order, and Lex got the stone. Clark reappears. He could have studied that thing in its case for the next 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years.
Oh, and not opened it and actually touched it.
Yeah. So, and what would Clark have done? I just don't understand, like, what would have happened? He wouldn't have went to school, certainly. We just stood around at the farm naked. Like, I don't know. That's why. Whatever. Just doesn't make any sense.
That's why I'm doing the fanboy gymnastics I am to try and understand. But,
all right, I'll go with you. I'll go with you.
So, that's the only way. I know it checks out for this stone, and I'm pretty sure it checks out for the transference stone, but I'm not sure about the other stone, like the air stone or whatever. But anyway, Lex touching the stone activates this sign, and we hear the same sound effect that we always hear whenever something's going on, like with a key or with anything Kryptonian, right? And you know, Martha's chasing after Clark, and she's like, I want my son back. You know, it was actually good. Again, Adele O'Toole has a lot to do in this episode, and she does great in this scene. But then he's like, I am Kal-El Krypton, and it's time to fulfill my destiny. Like, this is like, they use this in Smallville promotions for years to come, right? This this line and this moment, right? Because we get flight. Now, what did you think about our first flight of Clark in Smallville?
You know, it hasn't aged the best, the CG and stuff, and then the sort of Matrix fly around sort of thing, but it's an important moment, and it feels important when you're, you know, in the context of the story, it's like, oh wow, like this is cool. I remember back in the day when in 2000, what, 5, 4, 6, whatever this was.
Yeah. 2004.
Man, I remember getting super excited about this. Like, yeah, he's flying around and going to the plane and stuff. But it definitely feels like a really significant moment in the show while you're watching it.
Yeah, Greg Beeman, the director, says this in The Companion. Clark's flying was a lot of fun. It was very hard on Tom. We built a special rig for him to lay in, and then we hung him on this gigantic five-sided green stage, and we swooped the camera around him. Matt Beck, visual effects supervisor, filmed some of those key shots. Also, the sequence where he takes off and the way Annette freezes and the ground distorts and the way he rippled and flew through the air and everything starts swirling around. Filmically, that was all satisfying. So, two things on this. Super cool to see him fly. I'm not going to argue that, right? But I don't like the whole Matrix thing.
Yeah.
That was very, like, as you said, of the time, you know, because it's like, you know, we had seen Neo fly in the Matrix and he had all these ripples, and that makes sense for Neo. But one of the cool things about Superman was he could just lift up in the air at any time. Like, he doesn't need to, like, gather energy around himself or anything.
Right.
I understand why they chose to do it that way. But I wasn't the biggest fan. I just like 2-3 steps and he's up and away. That's why I like Superman. 2, would have been a lot cooler if he wasn't throwing his mom violently to the ground.
Yes, that's true. Because
yeah, they show this clip all the time. Like, you see Martha like on the ground here? Like, he just threw her to the ground. So it does put a little damper on this iconic epic Superman moment to me anyway.
Yeah, it's totally true. I agree with you too. The effortlessness that Superman can normally fly, where he just kind of like, just lifts himself off the ground and goes in any direction. Like, that's way cooler, but I can see why they went with something a little more visually interesting, especially for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, so much of what The Matrix did helped this show visualize Superman powers, like the bullet time and all that. And that's great.
Yeah.
But Superman is not Neo. Let's not forget. So anyway. No. So we got this awesome stuff going on. He flies up into space, right?
Yep.
He flies over to, obviously, to, you know, Egypt or wherever, you know, Lex is flying back from. So that's really cool. But then, unfortunately, before we get to Egypt, we have to go to Paris.
Oh.
And we get Lana and Jason in this church, and she's there for an art project or something. And he starts, like, making out with her, and he's just being a goof, being just a horny guy. Right? That's what he is in this episode, just a goofy, horny guy.
Right? Yep.
And he brings her to her art project, Countess Margaret Isabel Thoreau. And he tells her that, oh, I think y'all have a lot in common, right? And she has to, you know, rub this brass engraving of her, and then she starts to, again, she was taking pictures earlier, now she's, like, etching a... an artwork thing, but you're right, this is where all that stuff starts, Dan.
Oh man,
the season of the witch.
because I you know, going into this episode, it's been years since I've seen it, and like I said, I think I just blocked it all out, and I'm like, wait a minute, is this when she becomes that witch? And then I'm like, oh yeah, her boyfriend, and you know, I don't know, spoilers, whatever, but you know, like, you don't want to get into it, and I'm like, oh god, if there's one thing you could erase from this episode, it'd be all the Paris stuff.
Yeah, if you could take that out, and this would be a much stronger episode and get a much higher grade from me, but we'll get there at the end, right? Yeah. But Jason, right, I don't know, because he brings her to this rubbing, all right, he even makes a joke about it, right? But anyway, he brings her to this etching, and he says, oh, you guys have a lot in common, and you think, like, because when you find out what you know at the end of the season, like, was this all a setup? Like, did they put Lana in the situation? Like, I don't know, right? Because, but who, I don't think they even knew, right? That's the thing. A lot of things, this episode, I don't think they even knew, right? But they're doing this engraving, and then, like, it starts to glow, right? And you see, like, oh, are those Kryptonian symbols there, I guess? Because you see, like, the Superman pentagram, you know, the five-sided shape there on her eventual sketching. And then we get blown out in light, you know? And that's the last we see her for a few minutes. But then we go back to Clark, and he's still flying towards Lex. And I gotta say, like, of all the flying of the whole show, I think the flying looks best in this episode.
Wow. This part was cool. I that's just a big statement I'd have to think about. But, yeah.
Well, he doesn't fly very much. But, you know, true. I think later on, like, it's very, like, clearly someone in front of a green screen. But this one, you actually, I don't know, there's just something about it where it looks like he's really in the environment that he's in flying around. So, I don't know. To me, that really... I mean, we'll see as the show progresses, but I mean, like, this is the first time they did it, and they put all the care and attention that was required into it, and I really like that.
Yeah.
So they get Martha, and she calls Dr. Swan, which is, you know, I guess who you would call in this situation. Now Christopher Reeve was actually going to appear in this episode. That was the initial part of the initial plans, but he was directing a movie at the time, and they were going to try and make it so Dr. Swan would come to Smallville. But he was thinking that they should come to him as they had the previous episodes, and they really couldn't work out the schedule. You know, he was actually supposed to be in this episode and the next episode gone, but they dropped that, and they introduced the character Richard Crosby, we'll get to in a minute. But there was talk of that, and then unfortunately, as we all know, Christopher Reeve passed away not long after this episode aired, just about you know, about a month or so. Mm-hmm. So that dropped the Dr. Swan plot, which is something that affected season 4. Because they had plans to he was going to play a bigger role in season 4,
mm-hmm.
and be part of the arc and all that, and then of course he passed away, and they had to kind of like regroup, and that's a big reason why we have Jane Seymour on the show. You know, she starred in Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve and was friends with him and kind of came onto the show you know, to kind of fill that role.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
So that was part of why she was on Smallville, and obviously they would have been a very different season, right? But they needed someone to kind of, like, you know, keep that storyline going. So, and actually, and there were a lot of rumors back in the day about, like, there was this group called the Seers, and it was going to be this. I remember on the internet there was, like, spoilers about this, but it was going to be kind of like an Illuminati kind of group about Kryptonian stuff, and Todd Slavkin says this in the companion. It was to be a version of the Illuminati. At one point, we felt the Stones might be part of a secret global organization that possibly involved Virgil Swan and Lionel Luther. The idea was nixed in favor of making the plot smaller and more contained.
So they were going to, like, heroes it.
Well, they do this in season 7 of Veritas, so they come back to this eventually.
Okay.
But I remember that because there was supposed to be, like, you know, Krypton's site, you know, back in the day, like, they had spoilers and I'd read them, and there were spoilers about, like, this guy called the Seer. He was, like, in a robe or something, and I was like, where is this in the episode? And they ended up, I guess they dropped it at, like, the script stage, but you're right, very heroes, you know, as well. It's a good point. So anyway, Lois comes by. And she's like, where's Clark? And Martha's like, upstairs, which I thought was real funny.
Little lie she had there. Yeah.
And they have this is a really good scene between Martha and Lois, because she's asking about, like, Chloe. And she's like, were she and Clark ever at Item? She's like, for like a minute, maybe. So at least I'm glad they acknowledged that, right?
Yeah. I thought that was great, like a little wink to the writers, like, yeah, we know.
Yeah.
We know.
We know. You know, Lois explains that the FBI had ruled the explosion of her safe house a gas leak, and that's a bunch of BS right there. And because of that, Lionel's going to go free because she was, like, the key witness. And it's like a Superman Returns situation, right? Superman's not there to, you know, testify against Lex Luthor, so he goes free. I guess it's the same thing with Lionel. I don't know why Chloe, and they need Chloe at this point, because they have that evidence already, but I don't know. It's all, you know, to make the ticking clock and make importance of all this. But again, for continuity, right? I give the show a lot of crap for continuity, right? But Lois mentions to Martha, hey, you used to work for Lionel. Do you have any advice on how I could get to him? And she says, stay away, you know? So this is, you know, good scene here between the two of them and a lot of good stuff back and forth.
Yeah, it's a great chemistry. And on that point of continuity, I like this little bit here about the Lionel too, because something you don't realize in the scene itself, but you pick up later when Lois has her scene with Lionel, that she probably was fishing for that information so that she could use it, or at least it was a happy, you know, circumstance, happy coincidence that she got that information so she could use it to see Lionel with those guards, because he fell for her trap of saying that she was Martha.
That was a great moment too at the end. We'll get to that, but yeah, totally. The seeds for that are planted here because she tried to see him and she keeps getting refused. So. Yeah. Then we cut back to Clark, and he busts into Lex's plane and uses the Force to call the stone to him. I thought that was interesting, right? That's a Kryptonian power I was not familiar with.
This is those times. Like, clearly, as fans, we just had a whole conversation about trying to bend the reality of Smallville to make any sort of sense. This is the part where it's like the writers just have to give you more, man. They can't be this lazy. They have to at least put a little bit of effort. This is obviously just so Lex doesn't realize who's taking the stone from him. And it's so dumb. And like, it's so like, okay, I flew literally across the world to get this stone, but I'm going to get 3 feet from it and then somehow use this magical force pulling telekinesis ability to get it without you seeing who I am. And I'm going to super speed off the plane just so, you know, for dramatic effect. It's infuriating because it's so dumb. It's like, even if that was his only mission and he didn't care, like, just fly through the plane and grab it on the way through or whatever. I don't know. It's just, it really irritated me when I watched it this time.
That's an excellent point. You know, I was going to more complain about the new powers, but I mean, you said it best there. It's just a plot device to make sure Lex doesn't see. Because you think he just bust in because he doesn't care. Yeah. Right, this is Kal-El, right? He doesn't care who knows who he's Clark Kent or whatever. He's flying around, obviously. Yeah, he should have just busted back there and taken the stone. But I don't have to pay attention to if any other stones react this way to him, if he can call them to himself, you know? But it makes this eye hole, right? and then you see Clark get the stone. He flies off. It is pretty badass. All, you know, complaining aside, I did enjoy this in a vacuum. But you're absolutely right about how ridiculous it is. But then we see, you know, Lex's eye looking through the eye hole. And you're like, did he see Clark? He did not see Clark. You know, he didn't see Clark, but I think that's what they were trying to, like, make you think for a second there.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't worth the extra power that he got out of nowhere.
Talk about new powers. That's a new power.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, as he was approaching the plane, I really liked in the cockpit. They're like, what is that? Bird? Plane? It was a great, you know, update on the, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. So that was a really cool little nod to that as well.
That was cutesy.
Then we get back to the Kent farm, and Martha's just kind of depressed here, cleaning up the mess that Clark left behind. And Bridget Crosby shows up. And Bridget Crosby, played by Margot Kidder, who, of course, played Lois Lane in the 4 Superman movies in the 70s and 80s. What did you think about this stunt casting of Margot Kidder?
You know, I guess it goes back to the same complaint we were just having. The writers don't know how to be subtle about it. I seeing Margot Kidder again is great. Anytime that they have these sort of Superman alumni come in, that's great stuff. I love it, you know. But then they start talking about, you know, she starts talking about her relationship with Dr. Swan. She's like, yeah, we were more in another lifetime, in another universe, in another series of movies, or whatever, you know, whatever she says. And it's just like, sometimes it's just like, no, you don't have to shove it down our throats. We get it. Right. You know, just a little something is nice. But no, but seeing, you know, her there, you know, even with an O'Toole there, obviously, it's cool. I like it. I like that sort of stuff. That sort of meta context is really fun for me.
Yeah, you know, if you have to replace Christopher Reeve, she is the perfect person to do it. You know, because obviously you had Superman from the movies. Let's get Lois Lane from the movies as well. And Smallville was really good about this. They brought back so many people, right? I mean, they brought back Jimmy Olsen. They brought back General Zod. You know, so it's really cool to see Margot Kidder. Now, this is a good scene. It's a nice long scene between them. As you say, they kind of talk back and forth. Martha gets mad. Like, I thought Dr. Swan wasn't going to tell people. And he's like, no, he said it wasn't going to leave the foundation, and it hasn't. That's quite a loophole they found, right?
Yeah.
You pulled the Obi-Wan it there.
The old Obi-Wan there, yeah. I will say, too, though, that I just gave them a knock, the writers a knock for not being subtle, you know, kind of going for the obvious kill all the time. I'm glad that we didn't get a scene between Lois and Lois in this episode.
Mm. Well, I'm sure had Margot Kidder continued to come back, I'm sure they would have done it.
Yeah, I'm sure they would have. I'm sure they would.
She has one more short scene in another episode and then doesn't come back anymore. And we'll talk about that when we get to that episode. But you're right. Like, this is the episode of Lois, isn't it? I mean, yeah. You have Lois on Smallville, Lois comes back. They did show some form of restraint. I'm sure if they could have figured out a way to do it, Dan, they would have done it. But she does mention that the symbol that was burned to the Kent field at the end of season 3 was the Kryptonian symbol for Crusade. So we have a plus one for episode title set in episode. And then she gives Martha some black kryptonite. So we have a plus one for amazing Technicolor Kryptonite. Margot Kidder just checking the boxes for our tally board here. I assume that Dr. Swan made this black kryptonite because, as we see later on in season 4, Lex makes it in a lab through overheating green kryptonite. So I don't think they ever encounter like black kryptonite in the wild, so to say. I think it's one of those created ones by humans, which again, in its own way, is a reference to Superman 3. Because if you remember in Superman 3, they try to make green kryptonite, but there's an unknown element, and they put tar in it, and that kind of has the same effect, sort of, that this black kryptonite does. You know, split things into two. So, I don't know. So, anyway, lots of Superman references there. And you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Margot Kidder passed away earlier this year, unfortunately. Died in her sleep. Think it might have been a overdose of medication, intentional, maybe not. She had a lot of rough years,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
After the Superman movie, she did not really go on to much success, you know, and abused alcohol and drugs and stuff, and had some mental issues, some real problems, you know. But good on her, you know, she kind of pulled her life back together and was on the, you know, convention scene and was, you know, doing some minor acting, you know, little TV movies here and there, right? But she had a tough, you know, few years. It is kind of tragic. Look at the people from the Superman movies, Dan, you know, like Christopher Reeve, right? Paralyzed, you know, Margot Kidder, you know? So you look at these guys, you're like, ouch, like it's tough. You know, I love those movies, but that is in the back of your head when you watch those movies again, like, you know, where they are all these years later. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sad. It's unfortunate. I mean, she does look like she, you know, at least here in this episode, she looks good and she does mm-hmm. well.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. It was great to see her. You know, I mean, it truly is. I didn't think about that, but the episode of Lois with her coming back, and then of course with Eric and Rance's introduction. But yeah, so she gives Martha this black kryptonite is like the way to, you know, I don't know how they know how to fix Clark, but you know, Dr. Swan knows all this Kryptonian stuff, so gives her this box and tells her the only thing that's more powerful than a father's will is a mother's love. So that's kind of. I guess you could look at that like Lex Luthor. You know, he has his mom who had died, but his dad has a powerful will. So I'm like looking at it like in the overarching series. That's a cool line. But anyway.
Yeah, but it does feel like plot device. Like, yeah. here's literally a substance in a box that can solve all your problems. Good luck.
Deuce X box.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So Lex goes to visit his dad in jail, and I like how he says, "Wow, Dad, you're in great shape," and he totally is. John Glover, you know, probably in his late 50s at the time of the show, like he is in amazing shape. he's working out. It's cool because he has all these books. He's obviously gonna be in this cushy prison, as he would until he gets really convicted. But
well, it was the end of the last episode where they shaved his head too, right?
Yes. Yeah, so he has a totally new look, which I like. It does shake things up in a good way, unlike some of the other shakeups they do on the show this season. But yeah, it's so weird to see Lionel without his mane of hair, isn't it?
I like Lionel with shorter hair. I feel like he's even, in this episode specifically, he's super menacing. I mean, he's kind of always menacing. John Glover's a great actor. But I just feel like he's more physically intimidating with the shorter hair.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a tank top. He's in short hair. Looks like, you see him earlier and he's like in a trench coat, a long hair. Like, I don't know, I could take this guy in a fight. But you see him now, he's a tank top and a bus guy. Like, oh, I'm not going to mess with this guy. This guy's hardcore.
Yeah, it's like you never think of, Captain Picard as a fighter until he starts to fight Klingons. And you're like, oh, man, like under that great intellect, you still don't want to mess with this guy, man. He could take you.
For sure. But, Lex thinks that Lionel stole the stone. Because, Clark used the Force, he didn't see he took it. And this just leads us to exposition of Lex is talking about there's three relics spread across the world, which when put together is a library of knowledge that would put the Library of Alexandria to shame, right? And apparently Luther Corp Lionel had put out six expeditions in the past 2 years to look for it. So this is kind of them like retconning this has been going on all along, apparently. So. Yeah. So now we know what Lex is doing and whatnot. And I don't like this plot line. I don't like uniting three stones. It's so convoluted, I like it. I like clean Superman origin. Here's a crystal in your ship. You throw it and makes the fortress a solitude, right? It just makes more sense that way because it makes the fortress specifically something Jor-El created for Clark, right? This is like anybody could have put these together and done this. It's less personalized, I think.
Well, convoluted is one word to describe it, and I absolutely agree with that. I united three stones of power in The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Like, this is a video game plot line, which works way better in that medium. For something like TV, even though it's longer form, it just feels... it becomes monotonous after a while if you're doing the same thing, the same sort of task every time. And it's just... Yeah, this plot line also is one of those things where you're just like, okay, can we just get over this? Like, this doesn't have to be the same thing that we do all the time.
Yeah, it is the overarching plot line. Well, that and the witches, and the witches are connected to this, which is another reason I do not like it.
Because of course, because why wouldn't they be? Oh my goodness.
They do have a couple parting lines of dialogue here because Lex, they mentioned Chloe dying and. Lionel's like, that was an accident. She didn't deserve to die. And Lex is like, well, and I did, because he calls Lionel out for being poisoned. And he says that, that poison would have killed any ordinary man, but apparently I'm not ordinary. And Lionel's like, of course not. You're my son. And Lex says, God help me. And I think that's a great way to end that conversation. So, but then we go back to the caves, and we see the Naaman and Sagith painting, right, at the top of like the two heads on the one body. And I don't know if that's intentional or not, but it kind of... foreshadows what's going to happen to Clark at the end of this episode.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even see about that.
I have given up on trying to figure out where stuff is in this cave, what it does, what the geography is, like what the function of certain things are. There is no rhyme or reason. Because he goes up to, talk about new powers. He goes up to the slot and then where the octagonal disc used to go, right? And then, changes all the symbols and opens up the fissure. And I was, in our last episode of Covenant, season 3 finale, I had speculated, is this the chamber? Like, they open up this fissure in the cave, right? I'm like, is this the chamber from season 4? And it is, all right? So he opens up this new chamber that we just saw in the last episode. He goes in there, totally new slab. It's got symbols, it's got spaces for stones, it's got slots. It's like, this is like a new plot device for this season. And it's like, can we stop with the caves, right?
You don't understand. Clearly, this is the Room of Requirement.
The Room of Requirement. Yeah, the Fortress of Solitude, but you have the Room of Requirement. It's like, it was funny. I remember in the season 1 finale, Tempest, in that episode I was talking about Matt Truex, we were joking about the caves and the slot and all this stuff. And he's like, You know, there's not just one slot that key goes into the caves. It's like, oh, you're right. Because later on in season four, like, Clark, like, slides it in, like, but only the first half of it into the table. Because it's just like, I give up trying to understand how this stuff works. You know, the crystals, they're so alien, I can just say, okay, they're doing their thing, right? But this stuff, it's convoluted, and it's kind of frustrating, as you can hear. Yeah. So anyway, Clark puts the stone in, there's space for two more stones. So we see that this is what Lex was talking about and all this and that, right?
So he got to level up, but he wasn't done with his quest yet.
There it is. That is such a video game plot thing. That is so Zelda. Thank you for bringing that up. The Triforce will be united. But Lana wakes up. Remember, we got her in this episode, guys, unfortunately. So it's like, oh, I know, it's such a letdown when we get back to her. She wakes up naked in her bed in Paris, and we see that her art was finished, and we clearly see the Kryptonian symbols on it now, and there's this banging at the door, and she opens up, and it's Jason. He's like, hey, we were supposed to meet at 10 a.m. It's new. What's going on? She's like, oh, let me get dressed, you know, and she goes back to what she was doing, which is really like, how did she get there? I don't know if the show ever answers that. I assume Jason or his mom or something took her back. Who knows?
If the writers don't care, why should I?
There you go. So, but if we took that attitude, why'd we even podcast, Dan?
That's a good point.
it's our job to figure this out.
It's just that you know where this storyline ends up, so I immediately stopped it.
Like, exactly. No, absolutely. It's so easy. That plot line is so disconnected from everything else. If you delete those scenes and make this episode, like, I don't know, 30 minutes, much better episode. Yeah. So anyway, Clark, as you were saying earlier, he leaves the chamber to do who knows what, to wait for the next sign, right? But then Martha comes up to him and hits him with the black kryptonite, right? And it kind of splits him into two people. And I was really hoping for I mentioned Superman 3 earlier. I was really hoping for a two Clarks split apart battle, you know? I assume they ran out of special effects money. Because he did fly. They got a lot of special effects in this episode. It looks good, you know, with the flying and all that stuff, totally. But this part does seem kind of cheap to me. Like these two, like kind of blobby Clarks fighting each other. We see the Kryptonian Scar 8 Clark, which is, like, cool for continuity, I guess, because I know what that is! It's from season 2 and 3. That's the only reason it's there. There's no other reason for it to be there. But it's for you to tell, like, the Kryptonian side.
Because only bad Clark would have a scar.
Yeah. And then you speak about video games. This is such video game dialogue. He's like, your human side has made you weak or something. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know? So it would have been, I don't know. They do Clark versus Clark on the show many times, but I feel like this would have been the perfect time to do it if Black Kryptonite really does split you into two parts, which we see later on in the show it truly does. So I'm going to chalk that up to budget. I feel like if they had unlimited budget, we would have seen two Clarks fighting each other, which would have been pretty awesome.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
But Martha kind of cheers him on, you know, and he overcomes Kal-El. Blows him up with the black kryptonite. I don't understand. I'm not sure, but
because
they never really, if it's like Superman 3, right? If they truly split into two people, right? I would understand, right? But they're still like the same form, so I don't know, like, and that was programming, right? So it's very, very confusing.
Yeah.
And as you said, if the writers don't care, why should we? So, but when he blows up or whatever, I guess Kal-El blows up or something, Jonathan wakes up from his coma. Like, oh, that's connected. I mean, obviously you knew it was connected, sort of, but the A-B correlation, again, it's very convoluted, I think.
Yeah.
So they go back to the hospital, and the Kents are having a nice moment. Jonathan, he tells Clark, he's like, your mother tells me you can fly? And he says, Kal-El can fly. Clark Kent is still earthbound. It's like, okay, guys, we get your loophole.
It doesn't count.
He says that he doesn't remember the 3 months he was in wherever he was. You know, that room, I guess.
Yeah, what was he doing? Just, you know, he was in Terminator standby mode.
Well, Jor-El was like reprogramming him, I guess, but to what end? But anyway, couldn't they just have a conversation? Jor-El was like, look, here's the deal, all right? There's three stones. You know, here's where they are. Put them together and then level up, right? He does say that flying felt amazing, but he's not going to do it. So they tell you that, okay, guys, we gave you one episode of him flying, but you know, that's it. So don't expect that. If he ever turns into Kal-El again, he might fly. But, you know, but even when he's on like Red Kryptonite and calls himself Kal, he doesn't fly. He leaps tall buildings in a single bound, as we see later in the show. But anyway, they have a great kind of moment here talking about the Kents, you know, because Clark said, hey, the real hero here is Mom, you know. She held it together while you were in a coma and I was missing. And this is great, you know. She says that, look, I had faith that my family was going to be together again. And this is why I say, like, this episode is probably Martha's best episode for all these reasons.
Yeah, it's great. And it's, you know, she's such a wonderful presence on the show anyways. She really does. And obviously once Jonathan's kind of gone, she picks up a lot of that slack as well. But she's just such a great, like, an amazing character, and Annette does such a fantastic job. It's I love when she does get the spotlight, and like she proves it in this episode that she deserves it.
So then we get a ridiculous shower scene with Lana and
entirely gratuitous.
Yeah, it's so gratuitous. There's no reason for this, right? No. We see her in the shower, and then honestly, what pushes over the edge for me to absurdity was, like, we see, like, the Jessica Rabbit silhouette.
Yep.
You know? It's like, this is not Kristen Couric, all right? I know for a fact.
She has her hand up on the shower bar up top and just standing there. And by the way, the entire point of the scene is so that we learn she has a back tattoo. We don't learn that until she gets out of the shower, making the entire shower completely pointless.
Well, when I was rewatching it, I thought, oh, she's going to tell Jason she's going to meet him downstairs in that earlier scene, right? And then she's going to go over to the mirror and see her tattoo. And that's going to be it. Now, because I don't remember this episode as well as I used to. But no, this is a whole other scene. Like, as you say, completely gratuitous. And we see that she has a symbol. What would you call that kind of tattoo, Daniel?
I did call it a tramp stamp. That's what it's colloquially called. But I guess it's probably a little bit higher. But yeah, it's, you know, it's right above the buttock. Mm-hmm. So that you can show it on television and also suggest other things, I would guess. Now, I'm not a writer or a producer of the show, but that's what I would guess they were doing. It does seem a little out of character for them. I remember that season one or two episode where she went semi-skinny dipping in the school pool.
Mm.
But I don't think they would ever take advantage of young Miss Crook. I certainly hope not anyway.
You know, I asked you that because, one, I didn't want to say the term, but I knew. I was hoping you would. So we all know what that is. Oh, that's what it is, right? And that's the thing about season four. It gets a little trashy, you know, for lack of a better word. Like this scene, for example, right? It's like, what is this? You know, like this is something like, and John Schneider actually mentioned some things about that, like at the time. He was like, I feel like we used to be more of a family show. And I 100% agree because this is like, I understand it's the CW or the WB at the time. And it's like, you know, I know your audience, but there's a certain, I don't know, there's just certain things that feel a little too much, and I feel like that's where we're going with this stuff. So anyway, there we are. There's your Lana plot. What did she have, like, what, three scenes? And
yep, three. One in Madeline, one in the church, and then one in the shower. So
they split these up, but they're basically, yeah, it's basically four scenes with the shower scene and her waking up scene, which I thought was the same scene. It might as well have been, right? Yeah. So anyway, that's her. Yes, she's still in the show, guys. Pete left and he stayed gone. Lana left. She's still here. So deal with it, I guess. So anyway, then we cut to a great scene between Lionel and Lois Lane. Because it's funny, Lionel is looking like in a mirror, kind of fixing his hair and stuff. And then you see Lois, and this is well directed. You see Lois come in and we see her reflection in the mirror and he says, you're not Martha Kent. And the implication is Lionel was like kind of like making sure he looked kind of good for when Martha showed up. I love that. I know it's subtle, but he's got the thing for Martha, which is a great kind of, you know, an undercurrent of their entire, you know, relationship on the show, which I really like. But this is a real good scene between Lois and Lionel, isn't it?
It is. And it shows that, you know, for all of her naivete and her youth, she's kind of up here just to size Lionel up. Like, she's like trying to see, you can kind of see like the beginnings, at least the idea of this Pulitzer Prize winning award winning journalist, you know, in her youth. And it's really cool. I like that she's brave and she's bold and she's not afraid of Lionel. You know, there are a few characters on the show, of course, that aren't afraid of Lionel, but it's few and far between, I think. You know, most people are terrified of him, and it's really cool to see her just be like, "Eh, whatever." You know, I'm coming after you, man, and it's cool.
I like what she was implying. She was kind of toying with him. She's like, "Oh, I have a theory." She's like, "Chloe's dead now, and her testimony means you're gonna walk. But are you being set up? Like someone like setting him up to be free so they could kill him then? Like." That kind of gets in his head. You can tell that at the end. But at the same time, she thinks Lionel killed Chloe. So I'm not sure where they were going with that. But this was an interesting scene. As you said, it kind of sets up her tenacity as a reporter. And in The Companion, John Glover had this to say about the scene. Quote, "We had a great time together. We both thought that we would continue working together. But then they dropped that part of the story." Unquote. Classic Smallville.
Yeah.
But this is a good scene. If you're trying to establish this Lois Lane, this episode, you know, does a good job of it. And this is a great example why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we got our final scene at the Smallville graveyard. Lois is at Chloe's grave and she's talking about how she didn't go to her funeral and all this. And it's a good scene. Again, they're showcasing Erica Durance and Lois Lane's character in the show. And one thing about the tombstone, though, it's in 1987. So sadly, I guess she was 14 in season one after all. I try to justify all the things these characters do by saying they were 15, 16, 17, and 18, but I guess not. So she was driving around, running the torch, doing all these things. She was 14 years old. That is ridiculous.
Eh, the driving laws are a little looser in Kansas, I
guess. Clearly. Clark shows up. This is like their second meeting because, you know, Clark, it's the first time Clark has been himself since they met. He mentions that Chloe was my best friend. And I want to say, Clark, how many best friends did you have? Cause, right? Because Lex was his best friend, right? Pete was his best friend. Now Chloe's his best friend. Like pick a best friend, Clark. Come on, man.
I would think Pete should be his best friend, but no, I guess not.
Not anymore. Out of sight, out of mind, I guess.
Yeah.
But I like the back and forth that they have because she says, "The only thing I like about you is your mom."
That's good. Yeah.
I just thought that was great. And they do, again, they do these meet cutes, and this is not how I would have ideally had Lois and Clark meet, but they chose this direction, and they are doing well with it in this context, I think.
Yeah. Like we talked about before, if you're going to do it this early, if this is where you're going to put them, I'd say this is about as strong as you could probably ask for.
And we established that Lois is going to stay at the Kents while she investigates Chloe's death. Which is going to lead to some hijinks, as we find out in the next episode. But then Lois walks off, and you know she's like, "I'm going to give you a minute." And you think, "Oh, cool, maybe Clark's going to say something to Chloe's grave," because you know Tom Welling hasn't had much dialogue this week, as you mentioned. I bet he loved this week. You know, he's just like, "Oh, how many lines do I have to memorize? Like 12? Okay, great."
Except for the flying parts, I'm sure.
Yeah, that made up for him. She's like, "I am never putting on a Superman costume. This is what did it, this episode. I'm never flying, no tights ever again." Yeah. So he looks down at Chloe's grave, and he decides to x-ray it. Why would he do this?
I guess closure. Here's the thing. Superman wouldn't do that, I don't think. But I think Clark's young enough that I forgive it. And it's obviously an easy way to move the plot forward very quickly, you know, to get us from we don't. It actually kind of undercuts the whole point of the episode, I feel like, in a lot of ways. If they saved this reveal to the beginning of the next episode in some other way, it'd probably be better. But it didn't bother me too much. I was like, okay, he's sad his friend's dead, and he just wants to be 100% sure, make sure there's no weirdness going on. Because it's
well, he wasn't there. So I get that. But it was an odd. I mean, it's a great way for him to find out she's not. Oh, it's an empty coffin, right? Yeah. But then I think the explanation they get in the next episode, well, yeah, she was blown to 100 bits. Of course, there's no corpse. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, that would make perfect sense, right? Like when they buried Lex, right? And at the beginning of season 3, there was no body there, you know, and they thought he was dead. But anyway, I thought, okay, why did he do that? And then, two, why did he tell Lois? Lois, Chloe's not dead.
Like, immediately, yeah. It's like, Clark, man, you got to learn how to keep your cover. Like, just find an interesting way to, you know, to tell her, you know, just blurt it out. Like, what was his next line? I just saw into her coffin.
Right. I mean, we'll find out next week, right? But keep your cover, man. Like, he should keep that information to himself and then, you know, see where it leads. Because now, I think maybe he got caught up in the emotions, like, oh, Lois is really upset that her cousin Chloe died, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell her, oh, it's okay, she's not dead. But yeah, Clark not thinking things through. That is one of the different. Kryptonite is Superman's greatest weakness. His second greatest weakness is not thinking ahead, you know, as we find out. But hey, we got a great cliffhanger for next week. Where's Chloe?
I didn't go to your funeral. I hate funerals. Dad says everybody does, but it's a way of paying tribute to a life well led. I hate myself for being weak. I just knew that the moment I came here, it would make it real. I promise I will find out who did this to you. Even if I have to do it alone.
You're not alone.
A fact you could have shared before you were breathing down my neck.
Sorry, Lois, I didn't know you were out here.
Glad to see we've moved beyond the clothing optional stage of our relationship. I'm surprised you even remember who I am.
Chloe's cousin. Nicorette addiction, can't stand uncomfortable silences.
I guess this means your synapses are all firing again.
Look, I can't explain my actions over the past few days. But Chloe was my best friend. You're not the only one who misses her.
I'm just the only one doing something about it.
I get the feeling you like to do things yourself.
My dad raised me to be independent and self-sufficient.
That'd be one way to describe you.
You know, the only thing I like about you at the moment is your mom. You can't possibly be as weird as I think you are with a mom that cool.
Look, why don't you let me help you find out who did this to Chloe? Come on, you can stay at our house while you're in town. It beats living out of your car.
Thanks. But you should know I don't pay attention to curfews and I never make my bed.
Crusade got a 9.1 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 5 out of 5. So Dan, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Crusade?
I think I'd put it at a solid B, maybe a B plus. I'd probably say a B. Really, it's good, but the plot holes and the Lana stuff really drags it down. Yeah, I'd say B. I really liked the sort of. I, of course, I love Lois. That's why I'm here. I'm here to talk about Lois. I just absolutely love her. And every scene she's in is golden for me. And then, of course, they have some interesting stuff. I like the Ma Kent stuff is really great. But the stupid Lana stuff and just like the convenience of the plot. Oh, I also do like the Lex and Lionel scene and the Lionel and Lois scene. Jeez, there's too many L names in the show. So there's a lot of good stuff there. Really good stuff. But it's dragged down by some other stuff that's not as well developed.
Yeah, talking through it, it's like, there were a lot of hiccups here. Like, there were some great stuff here, you know, especially, I mean, it's an iconic episode. It's the first one where he flies, the first one with Lois, you have Michael Kidder in it, you know. There were a lot of cliffhangers in season 3, and I feel like they kind of delivered on some. Others, they just kind of didn't deliver on so much. And you know, we talk about Lana, right? It's not Lana herself. It's what they choose to do with her character, you know? Like, they chose to send her to Paris and do art school and give her this goofy boyfriend. And that's not what we wanted from Lana. So, but that whole subplot just pulls this down. And unfortunately for me, it's going to pull it down out of the A range. I'm going to give this one a B+. B+ for me, B for you. You know, good could have been great if they paid a little more attention to these massive plot holes.
Yeah.
And just this convenience and over convolution of everything. But anyway, let's get into our tally board. We have a +1 for Amazing Technicolor Kryptonite, our first appearance of Black Kryptonite. So that's 6 so far. I will say this is the first appearance of Black Kryptonite in anything. Smallville is the reason Black Kryptonite has made its way into the comics. It's been on Supergirl now. So Smallville establishing things for other Superman versions to take. So I think that's really cool.
That's always fun. Yeah.
We have a +1 for Amnesia Count because Clark doesn't know who he is when he comes out of the cave. So that's 21 so far. We'll get a plus one for episode title set in episode. So that's a plus one. So that makes 24 episode titles set in episode so far. We have a plus two for hospital visits. That's Clark and Jonathan. So we were at 47 hospital visits so far. We are 67 episodes in, 47 hospital visits. So
they got their money out of that set.
Well, yeah, that's what they did. Hey, you know, the Kent's insurance, you know, it's already been maxed out, as they said.
It's paying for something, you know.
And then we have a plus one for under the influence, because Clark was under the influence of Jor-El. He was Kal-El. Like, so we're going with under the influence. So that's plus one that makes 24 under the influences so far. And then I have a correction from Covenant. I had added a plus one for Smallville High School student death because of Lindsay. But she was not a Smallville High School student. She was visiting from out of town, as we found. We looked at the obituary a little closer. So we're minusing one from that. We're back to 11, not 12. So just for the record. And then finally, we have a Bechdel test pass. We have good scenes between Lois and Martha, between Bridget Crosby and Martha. So this is a definite pass for the Bechdel test this episode.
What did, wait, what does it count though? Isn't the stipulations that it's not the conversations that happen between the women not to be about a man?
That's true, but it was more about the plot function than Clark himself.
That's fair.
You know?
That's the way I choose
to see it. I feel like the rules are a little fluid in that respect. Like if it's Chloe and Lana or Lois or whatever, yeah, and they're talking about Clark, it almost always goes there. But we're talking about the way Lois and Martha were talking about, you know, Lionel and stuff. I think there's enough here to where it passes.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. It was actually something I noticed when I was watching the episode when Ma Kent was really, you know, a big focus, and was like, oh man, yeah, it's cool. She's talking to. They have their first meeting with Lois, and that's great. And then between Margot, and it's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. But it's just, I was just thinking, well, they're all about Clark. But I guess it's more situational than anything else. So, yeah.
Right. Well, Dan, it's been fun talking about Crusade with you, man. I must say, if it's the Lois stuff, now I have distance from it all, and I got my Chloe blinders off and all this stuff, right? I really like Lois in this episode. I think Eric Durant was really good from the jump. At the time, I was like, who is this coming in here? We already have a Lois, you know? So I kind of had a chip on my shoulder about that for a while. But definitely, it's fun to go back, because I haven't rewatched this episode in so long, and to go back and see where it first started with Lois and Clark here in Crusade. And yeah, it hit the ground running. And you know, we had a lot of fun talking about it. That, you know, that's the most important thing. So
absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It was a blast.
Absolutely, man. So if people want to find you out there on the internet, where else can they find you?
They can find me all over the place. Probably the easiest place would be on Twitter, at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word, as in Erica Durant is the number one Lois Lane. At me, people. At me.
And you also have a Star Trek podcast as well.
I do indeed. It's called City Alpha 3. It's on the Nerd Party Network, where we talk all things Star Trek. And man, it's a hell of a time to be a Star Trek fan, I tell you what.
Indeed.
We got like 18 shows coming down. You know, 3 years ago, it was a desert. And now we have like 3 shows and 2 movies coming out. And it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. And it's exciting time. So if you like Star Trek, check it out.
All righty. Well, as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of Standard Orbit, a Star Trek original series podcast. You can find us on Twitter at TrekFM. And as for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville, or you can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week talking about Gone. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. Yeah.